to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Low North Bay Section Giants. Tom Tamale, just Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 14. NASDAQ Futures up 65. Dow Futures up 101. So we have a bullish start to the week here on Friday. For those who still can remember Friday, we had an interesting day. The Dow down 268. The S&P down 6. NASDAQ was up 63. NASDAQ's up every single day. We're back into the fangs, and we're running stuff up, and we don't care how much this stuff is. And it's pretty interesting. One of the Jeremy Siegel, well, you don't necessarily, you know, it's not like he's gospel or anything, but he claims that the market is one bad inflation report away from a correction. Jeremy Siegel warns. What do you think about that, man?
Sounds right.
It says here, if the Fed suddenly gets tougher, I'm not sure the market is going to be ready for a U-turn that Chair Jerome Powell may take. We have one more bad inflation. Now, my question to you is, why do we need another bad inflation number where we know kind of where it is? He criticized the Fed for being far behind the curve in terms of taking anti-inflationary action. So the Fed is still doing quantitative easing, even though inflation is all over the place. That's why you can't short the market. You can't short the bonds. I mean, they're still pouring money in. You try and sell them, they're buying them from you and driving them right up your behind. It's pretty scary. I don't know. I've never seen anything quite like this. I wonder if Paul really wants a job or back or what he's doing. I think he wants to be out of there. I don't think he wants any part of if and when this were to turn. I don't know. That's crazy stuff. Did you make it through the riots and stuff, or the alleged riots?
I'm unfamiliar with what you're talking about.
The Kenosha decision this weekend.
I did see the streets and sand trucks out by North and Clybourne on very early Saturday morning, so they were prepared Friday night just in case. But it was very cold, so no one was there.
Listening to that a little bit, and of course I got a huge dose of right-wing politics this weekend at my significant other's pad with her friends. I'm starting to wonder if everybody's a little bit... You know, man, it's not just the individual people. I don't understand where our logic is going. I honestly don't. I mean, I don't... On virtually every level. I know you're kind of intelligently so, because you got other things on your mind these days, but... I mean, I think we're really getting ourselves kind of crazed. This kid in, I guess, well, I'm going to try and tie this together if I possibly can, because yesterday morning I absentmindedly turned on Face the Nation, of course, was grilled by visitors and significant others alike about what am I doing watching this dribble. I'm like, well, you don't understand where people are coming from if you don't listen to them. I don't see how you could possibly listen to that, and everybody like abruptly leaves the room, and I'm like, I really don't need this on a Sunday morning, but... Right?
That's absolutely the state of the country right now.
I know.
If whatever your cable news show of choice is, if someone that likes a different one is there, not only will they not watch it, they'll ridicule you for watching it. And it's really weird. And I don't watch any of it, so I truly don't understand it. But talk about only watching your own team and cheering for your own team. It's really strange.
It is, and an interesting part is when you listen to the various sides of the issues, there comes to be all these amazing parallels where one side's talking just like the other. And I try to draw the correlation. They had a, do me a favor, who's lady senator, the Democratic senator from New York, tells her name. Well, she was referred to by everybody as that cow, which is a little abrupt, but, she was on first, and then right afterward is your buddy, what's his name? Rand Paul, who's the guy from Texas? Tells his name.
Ted Cruz?
Ted Cruz. In a checkered sport coat. He looked like he was a used car salesman. But anyway. The
female senator from New York is none other than, what's her name? Kirsten Gillibrand?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
She was on talking about all the different, and what's her name? The moderator. And she used to be on CNBC, didn't she? I think she was on CNBC. I think I heard from people there that she was, but she'd walk all over anybody to get to the top. Margaret Brennan?
Margaret Brennan. I think she used to be on CNC, yeah. CNBC.
Anyway, she's obviously very attractive, very bright.
I think she's still on CNBC.
No. She's a moderator for Face the Nation.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm thinking of Morgan something that's on CNBC.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think she used to be on CNBC at one point.
Yeah, I think she just... But anyway, she ended up on Face the Nation, which got to be one of the major jobs around, I would think. Matter of fact, it's got to be one of the top jobs in journalism, isn't it?
I would think so.
And anyway, she's on, and it's just funny that they, you know, I don't know. I mean, here you and I are doing a podcast, right? And the obvious questions that I would just ask in a second, and I think you would too now, because you're pretty good at this too. Are just not asked, and the other they're trying for this kind of zinger thing or something, you know, the Facebook moment or whatever. Instead of just asking like the regular old questions, I mean, she's pretty good, but I guess she can't be too hardball or people won't come back on either, right? I don't know that balance too much, but you start talking about these bills and, you know, the inflation and the COVID and all the other stuff, and she's basically talking about these bills are going to. They're going to help inflation. They're going to do this, and they're going to make things more productive. Everybody back to work, and God's sake, man, it's just and how it's not really going to cost all this money. And I don't. So then, of course, the people in the room with me are like, I said it's just like every party does the exact same thing. And of course, that brought if there were frying pans, they'd been wung at me. I said, go back to your friggin' hero, Dutch Reagan. You know, the guy has a massive tax decrease. You know, and I think the tax rates at the time were way too high. I mean, I get that part. But they had these incredibly stupid, whenever somebody says, we're gonna cut taxes, but by the way, everybody be so productive, we'll end up with more money in government. I got news for it. It's like saying we're gonna let some fuel out of the tank, but don't worry, it'll be just as full when we're done. No, it's not the way it works. In some very unusual events, if you went from like 90% tax to 50, you might actually, you know, get some in because people might do something where they weren't before, but it's very rare. So, and I said, you forget about 2 years later was the biggest tax increase we ever had. And that same thing with Trump. When Trump comes in, he has this huge tax decrease. The idea, and I can still remember the guy, you know, bleeding lies on TV saying, don't worry, this is going to cause so much more business, we're going to end up positive on that. How'd that work out? We're not.
No.
So now she's coming out saying all this money they spend, they're going to get it back in spades. So it's the same thing. Whichever side it is, gives you all this BS without any sort of rigorous study to it, without any sort of real plan. They tell you to the point where you better believe them or you're not part of the group anymore, and it never works out that way. It doesn't matter which side. Where am I wrong here? I mean, it's just all BS to help their side, their voters, and who think voting for them. Republicans continually want to lower taxes, which, by the way, I think is a good idea. I don't like paying taxes like anybody else. But the government is inefficient. But they never actually cut government. They just lower the taxes. So you end up in a hole. And then all of a sudden, the next guys come in, and we say, okay, we're going to send checks to everybody. Hopefully, they'll remember us in November. And they're not going to pay for it either. So either side, there's reasons why. Matter of fact, our buddy Paul just sent me a thing. I should dig it up here. In the last how many years, every 8 years, we've doubled the deficit. Doesn't matter who's in power. Absolutely doesn't matter who's in power. And so where people get this incredible difference between one side or the other, I don't see it, do you? Other than the group that's actually getting the check. I mean, there clearly is different groups that are being helped, but there's some total. If you're like you or me in the middle, it doesn't matter who's there, in terms of money anyway. It just goes deeper and deeper. Because I'm, you know, I'm not getting any of the largesse. I mean, I'm not one of the people with their thumb in the pie in this thing. Are you? I don't think so.
No.
Or the Republican side. I don't have, you know, some yacht or something. You know, all of a sudden don't have to, you know, whatever. I mean, it's. By the way, are you getting a yacht one of these days? Are you a yachtman?
I am not a boat guy. As far as I like sitting on boats and drinking on them, but I've never been one to drive one or clean one or anything like that. So I don't see, even if I had the money, unless I had enough to have someone do all that for me, I don't think I'd ever be a boat guy.
Yeah, I have no great affinity. There's one place I went one year when. Robin, she's been on the show. We've been friends forever. I went to her brother's graduation. How long ago was this? And from med school. So we went to Albany, and north of Albany is really neat places. I mean, upstate New York is pretty special. So if you got dough, let's put it that way. And there's a lake there, Lake George, right near Saratoga. Nothing is more fun than going to the racetrack in Saratoga. It's this real old track.
I would love to go.
It's special. I mean, it's really nice. And
how far is it from New York City?
Oh, it's a ways. Albany. Well, I don't know.
What, the Saratoga racetrack?
Yeah, it's your summer home. It's not. Okay. You know what? That's a good question. Why don't you dig that up? Because it's anyway, right near there, there's this Lake George, which is like a southern finger lake of Lake Champlain. I guess years and years ago they might have been together. I don't know. There was a waterway between the two. But it's this lake with, you know, a gazillion miles of shoreline, but it's really, really long, and there's like one road around it that's two lanes. So if you're in the middle and you want to go to a restaurant on the other side, forget it. You're getting there by boat. I mean, once you're there, I mean, if you're going any place, you're going by boat because the road is, it's impassable type of thing.
From Manhattan to Saratoga Springs, New York, where the racetrack is, it's 179 miles. It says it would take 2 hours and 51 minutes to drive it right now.
So it's like Fort Wayne or something.
Yeah.
Well, where'd you go this weekend? Was it about the same, huh?
Yeah. We went to Iowa City for our annual Iowa-Illinois football trip. Me and a couple, or my buddy Herb, who you of course know, and my brother and Jill, and left early Saturday at 7:30.
What'd you do with the pooch?
He stayed at the Pooch Hotel for one night, which he likes it there. But left at 7:30, got there at 11 for a 1 o'clock kickoff, had a few drinks. Of course, you can drink in the stadium now, which is a change this year. And it was just 52 degrees and sunny, and it was great.
How do you drink beers for 4 hours in one of those games and that snooze by the end of the game?
Well, we had a couple beers before the game. I think we had one beer during the game.
Ah.
Just because it's such a pain in those old football stadiums with the bleachers to get all the way down the row, get out there, wait in line.
Oh, they still got bleachers there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, unless you're in the snob seats, it's bleachers.
You're in the snobless seats?
Correct. We had great seats.
Don't you hate that?
We had great seats, but they were not in the press box sections where they have the actual seats. Now, if you're a season ticket holder, they put down the seat with the back on it, but it's on top of the bleacher.
Really?
Yeah. And the stadium is
sort of like Notre Dame seats.
Yeah, the stadium is built in
there. I mean, it's not temporary bleachers, it's concrete.
It's concrete.
So it's like Notre Dame Stadium, which pretty much sucks.
Yeah. All those stadiums that were built in the, you know, what 1920s, 1910s or earlier, I mean, they're big old brick stadiums with bleachers.
Well, they were designed. The game was 2.5 hours long.
Yeah,
and it was fine for that.
And I mean, it was my first time going to a college football game in 2 years because obviously COVID last year you couldn't go to any, and it did seem more media timeouts than ever. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. What
especially when you got like an injury or something like that or a replay, and then they stop it for that for 10 seconds, and then they decide, well, we're going to take a media timeout, and so then all of a sudden the guy gets up and he's fine, or he, you know, sort of gingerly walks off the field, and then you still got to wait another 4 minutes for the commercials.
What is the history? Is Iowa City the capital?
No, it was back in like the 1800s. Des Moines the capital.
All right, so when the land grant came, do you have any idea? I'm asking you this, like, I do this, which is a bad habit, by the way. Do you have any idea what the history of the idea of the land grant colleges is? Where it all, as soon as one person did it, they all did it, or what?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Well, they call Illinois, Iowa, Ohio State, they call them land grant universities because the states decided they wanted a university and gave all this property to a place. I mean, they just didn't. You just didn't get, you know, something like this, the size of Ohio State in the middle of Columbus without somebody giving it to you. So they call those the land-grant universities. When they all, because every state in the Big Ten, well, they were in the Big Ten back then, but everybody in the Midwest has these, I mean, everybody else must have followed the lead, and they essentially gave them this property to build a university for a state school. You ever heard that term, the land-grant university?
I don't know. If I've heard it, it was probably you on this show. It's not something I know about. It makes sense.
Yeah, well, that's what they used to call them. Not call them. It's not like you do that every day, but it's, that's how they were all started, right? Say it's where Ohio State, Michigan State, they were given all the land by essentially the state legislature. That's what the connection is. And I was wondering, who knows? I wonder if Jan Flanagan might know the history of that when he comes out. But,
by the way, I said that those stadiums were open at the same time. They were pretty much literally opened at the same time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City opened in 1929. Notre Dame Stadium in South Bend opened in 1930. Both on October, one on October 5th, one on October 4th. So almost exactly 1 year apart.
When in Michigan?
Probably around that same time.
I think it was a little earlier because that's... It might have been. That's why the Michigan was pissed at the Irish forever. They stole the plans for the Michigan Stadium and just built one smaller.
Yeah, Michigan was October 1st, 1927. So yeah, 2 years before Iowa and 3 years before Notre Dame.
You ever been to the Michigan one where it's half, it's in a hill?
I have not.
That's unreal. It's actually built into like a hillside. So you walk in and you walk in, you're like in the 50th row.
Oh, wow. I would love to go to a game there, but I never have.
I've been there once. Ohio State's really special because of the Ohioans.
Yeah, I've never been to a stadium. I haven't been to a lot of football, Big Ten football stadiums. I've only been to Iowa, Illinois, Northwestern. And I'm trying to think if that's it. That might be it.
Well, without going to all of them, so this is, again, this is a half-assed comment. I think the best stadium, if you got a decent seat, is Illinois.
Well, yeah. It's. I mean, really, any of these stadiums, at least in my experience, and I haven't been to many, but there's no bad seat, really, in these old stadiums. I mean, yeah, it sucks sitting on a bleacher, but as far as your viewpoint, I mean, we have great... I've sat everywhere in Kinnick, and I've sat everywhere in the Illinois Stadium. You have great sight lines.
Illinois is the only one that has a double deck.
Yeah, it does on that one side.
For a long period,
no one's there, but...
Well, for a long period of time, Illinois had more seats between the 20s than any other stadium in football.
Yeah, I can see that.
I remember we sat upper deck in about the fifth row in the 40. I don't think I've ever been in a better seat ever.
That's got to be Texas A&M now, most seats in between the 20s. They've got the huge upper deck, and it's just packed. And they're probably approaching 100,000.
By the way, over some adult beverages on Friday night, not that we ever get in debates at our table, the big debate was the, and only because I do the show, not because I listen to this stuff, but they were talking about somehow somebody on the subject of what's the biggest universities. And I said, I think you guys are all wrong. I only got like six of the top 10. I knew.
You're talking about biggest by enrollment?
Yeah.
We talk about this all the time.
Yeah. Well, I knew Central Florida was in there. I had no idea Texas A&M was number 3.
Well, they sort of jockey for position. Liberty University is number 1, which I never would have guessed.
Actually, this thing I saw was Central Florida. They got like 68,000 or something.
So if you pull up largest by enrollment, Liberty University is number 1, 75,044. Cal State Fullerton's number 2, 70,000. Texas A&M's number 3, 67,000. Central Florida's number 4, 66,000.
Right, so I was not looking by enrollment. It must have been by people there or something.
Yeah. Ohio State is 5th. 59. Maryland, which I wouldn't have guessed, is 6th, also 59. Then you have Florida International, FIU, they're 7.
They're around there, yeah.
At 56. University of Florida, Gainesville, 52. University of Minnesota, I wouldn't have guessed, 51,000.
Well, I know. They, at one time, they were the biggest, because they were the only state that didn't have any other campus but the one.
Yeah, so that, and then Texas at Austin is number 10. That's your top 10 by enrollment.
Tell you what,
Liberty University, the largest university in the United States by enrollment, 75,000 people.
It's amazing the lists you get, because the list it's a lot different than the list I had.
Well, it's not a lot different.
Well, Liberty wasn't even on mine. So what do they say? There must be a difference in how they define enrollment, because they weren't even in the top 10 in the list I had.
Yeah, it says Liberty University is a privately owned Christian university and is, in fact, one of the five largest Christian universities in the world. Located in Lynchburg, Virginia, Liberty is home to more than 15,000 students enrolled in various courses, along with 94,000 students enrolled in its online courses.
This other list I had didn't just included people there, with the people on campus. Hell, I mean, how big is the University of Phoenix, if you consider online?
Well, apparently not big enough to be in the top 10.
Plus, they're always giving those guys grief. So then your buddy Ted Cruz comes on, and he starts talking about all the stuff.
So you're looking at campus by enrollment list. And that's still similar, but definitely different. Central Florida's one.
They're one, yeah.
A&M's two. Ohio State, three. Florida National, four. University of Florida, five. So
three of them are in Florida. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. University of Illinois, six. Says
I would never have guessed that. It's the same. You're looking at the same list I was looking at.
Yeah, 56,000. Georgia State, which I didn't even know that was a big school.
Yeah, they're in Atlanta, right?
Yep. And then Arizona State, we knew about. Minnesota, nine. And Texas, 10.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do. I mean, I'm going to say that Georgia State doesn't have, like the dorms and stuff you would normally associate with university. Probably everybody just commutes.
Yeah.
Because it all started with guys talking about Catholic University. I said, no, DePaul is by far the biggest. And they are. I mean, actually, Georgetown's pretty close. Georgetown's like 19.
I didn't know Georgetown was Catholic.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's not Jesuit, though. It's, I don't know what the hell they are. I don't think they're Jesuit. Boston College is Jesuit, and all the Loyolas are Jesuit.
Yeah,
I don't know what they are out there. Something, but yeah. So all right, what about the Bears? God, what a disaster, eh?
Yeah, that was ugly, and it was a second game in a row where the offense, seemingly drove for a game-winning drive and scored the game-winning touchdown, only to have the defense give it right back. And then you have Justin Fields leaves early with a rib injury, and we'll learn more today about the extent of that, but he wasn't playing very well, and the offense certainly wasn't playing very well. And then Andy Dalton came in, and he threw the screen pass for the long touchdown, and then he had the sort of busted coverage long touchdown pass, and all of a sudden the Bears are have the lead and still not enough, and they lose 16-13.
Well, you can sure tell that even though he's, the raw talent that you're going to get out of a Justin Fields in terms of the reads and the release is a hell of a lot faster than close at this level from an experienced guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's what, 13, 14 years in the league?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You have to be pretty darn good to last in the NFL that long and healthy, too. And that's why they signed him. He's a good veteran guy that can start and get you wins if you need him. And then he's become a really good backup, and he'll probably be a backup as long as he wants to keep playing, because he's a talented guy and seems to be a good locker room guy. And he came in cold and played pretty well. 11 of 23 isn't very good. The screen pass, I mean, he threw a screen, and then the receiver got a bunch of good blocks and then blew it open, Darnell Mooney, for a 65-yard touchdown. That's not necessarily the quarterback, but that was a good play. And then, he threw the deep ball that was perfect to Goodwin, I think it was. And then boom, all of a sudden Bears have the lead and you feel like they're going to win. And the defense, I mean, that was like a hot knife through butter. The Ravens went right down the field with their backup quarterback.
Well, it's bizarre, man. You can't tell what's on the people or what's on the, because they got a lot of these teams all have people coming in and out, obviously, but I never saw there were three or four missed assignments on one drive that gave people, the one guy wasn't even covered.
I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. And the drive before, the Ravens were doing the same thing. They had missed assignments and guys uncovered. It's crazy, how when you're kind of supposed to be in like almost a prevent defense to a certain extent. Now, you don't want to be too conservative, but there should be nothing getting behind you at all.
Well,
what is going on?
Well, that's the name safety kind of connotes something.
I mean, good Lord.
If you're the last guy there, you don't let anybody run by you, right?
Well, there's no doubt that the Bears. Eddie Jackson was out. They're starting free safety, and they were rotating a bunch of backups in, and they just were not good. And they were fortunate that Quinn and the guys up front played so well and were getting pressure on the quarterback the whole game that it sort of hid them for a while. And the defense overall, I thought, played well. I mean, you give up 16 points at home, you should win every time. But the offense was just so bad.
What happened to the Ravens quarterback?
He had a virus, not COVID-related, and he couldn't keep anything down, like, all week, and he was just too dehydrated and sick to play, so they scratched him on Sunday.
Because, I mean,
so he wasn't even there.
Yeah, that team yesterday didn't look like one of the league. They think they're one of the league's best. They sure weren't yesterday.
No, not without him. No, that kid playing quarterback, that was his first start. And
horrible.
He wasn't horrible. I mean, but it's not like they lit the world on fire. I mean, he was he had a 78 quarterback rating, so he was pretty horrible, actually. 26 of 36, 219 yards. Most of that, again, on that final drive when there's broken coverages and no touchdowns, one interception.
Well, in regards to the Bears, it's easy to lob shots at them, but does it strike you that the all you talk about, boy, I happened to be listening to the radio for the coach's show last week. All they talk about is the quarterback, how he's going to be spectacular, the tight end, and the middle linebacker. Okay, that leaves you 19 guys. Does it strike anybody else but me that the defense that was pretty freaking good 2 years ago, the rainbow has set on all those guys? I mean, don't tell me you're going to bring Danny Trevathan back again next year. I mean, for God's sake.
You can't, yeah.
I mean,
you're building around Roquan Smith, the linebacker. You're building around Jalen Johnson, the cornerback, that's really good and young. And then, your front four has been really good, but Khalil Mack's now out for the year. Robert Quinn's not getting any younger. Akeem Hicks is old and getting hurt now all the time. So you're probably building around Eddie Goldman there and then some of the young
guys. Yeah, and he hasn't played, three games in 3 years?
Right. This year he's been good, those are your core guys, and then Eddie Jackson, your free safety, who was out yesterday with injury. So you got, sort of four young, good guys on defense that you're building around. And I'm sure I'm leaving a guy or two out.
Well, they're down. I think they only have four or five picks this year, of course.
Right.
I mean, they need like 10 guys.
And on offense, you have a couple of young offensive linemen that are starting to play better. And then obviously you have your second round pick that is coming back soon, Tevin Jenkins. So that's your core on offense. David Montgomery, I mean, I don't know how many years he has left on his contract, maybe one, but this Khalil Herbert guy looks almost as good as Montgomery. At running back, and then you have Darnell Mooney, who's a young, very good receiver to go along with Komet. So each side of the ball, I'd say you have five guys that you feel good about that are young anyway, and then you're going to have to fill in around them with draft picks.
Yeah, but real good teams, nobody has 11 on each side, but real good teams, that number is probably 7 or 8. The Bears
the Bears are 3-7. Not a real good team.
Yeah, but my point is they're 10, 11 people short.
Agreed. That's why they're 3-7.
But the reason why they are is because they don't care about no stinking draft picks.
Well,
the
Rams don't care about draft picks either, and they're in first place. I mean, there's different ways to do it. I believe, I 100% agree with you. I want to build through the draft like the Packers do, but there's many ways to skin a cat, I think is the saying. I mean, the Rams they traded all their draft picks. They don't care. All their guys are free agents or acquired by trades, and they're in first place. Their window is going to be small because if they don't win a Super Bowl this year or next year, they're going to be screwed.
Well, the only problem with that is, and the Bears did that for a while on offensive line. It all comes down to what year it is and who dumps who, and who is. I mean, if you're hoping for a bunch of teams to be like Detroit, which has salary cap problems even though they suck. Right, they might drop you with Dick Butkus because they don't even know they have them, right?
Yeah.
But by and large, this whole idea that we're going to count on other teams to drop guys that can still play because they don't want to pay them, I don't know that that's a. You might 1 year you might be okay, the next year you might not have any tackles, which is what the Bears don't have, right? Or whatever it is, you can't count on. No, I guess what I'm saying, even if you don't like younger players, which some coaches don't, it still behooves you to have 7 solid picks, or at least pretty solid picks every year, at least so you can trade them. You don't want to just not have them.
Agreed.
Yeah, anyway, so SP Futures up 14, NASDAQ Futures up 67. Be right back. Stacks for Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Hello, everyone. Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. This is for Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 1350. NASDAQ futures up 64. And we'll get the rest here as soon as I can figure out where all my stuff is here, Matty. Somehow or another, wait a minute, I'll find this in a second. Why don't you do traffic weather sports while I find my... I'm reading here about people losing, getting rid of their cable for sports. And I lost my page. So how about doing traffic weather sports?
I can do that. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a good start here on a Monday morning. No significant delays, it would appear, on the Edens and Kennedy so far. So that's good
news. So far, that's a predictive statement.
Yeah, if you're coming in here early on a Monday morning, of course, it's a holiday week. A lot of people are off this week, and that's probably why we're seeing some lighter traffic volumes. No issues on the Eisenhower yet either. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways are all quiet. Looks like our only crash in the area is in the northwestern suburbs. Higgins Road, which is Route 72 at Oakton Street, there is an accident, but everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, it's cold and blustery, very windy as well. Right now it is clear and 26 with wind chills in the teens. We're going up to a sunny high of 35, but it will feel like it's in the 20s. And then we'll actually warm back up a little bit tomorrow, where we could get into the upper 40s, low 50s. But today it's a cold one out there. Right now it's clear and 26, going up to a sunny high of 35. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast skies today, but a high of 81. Right now it's partly cloudy and 55. In sports, as we touched on a bit earlier, the Bears rallied back behind Andy Dalton after Justin Fields left with a ribs injury to take a late lead in Baltimore, 13-9. Bears went for two, didn't get it. And then turned the ball over to the Ravens and looking for the defense to hold them, knowing that Baltimore had to go all the way down the field and score a touchdown to win. But that's exactly what the Ravens did. Behind Tyler Huntley, their backup quarterback, they drove down and scored, and the Ravens beat the Bears 16-13. We will learn more about the extent of Justin Fields' injury later on today, but he struggled 4 out of 11, 79 yards. No touchdowns, no interceptions. He did lose a fumble. Then Andy Dalton came in, was a lot better. 11 of 23, 201 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, including what looked to be a game-winning touchdown pass to Marquise Goodwin, but the defense couldn't hold. David Montgomery, 14.
The Ole defense.
Yes, David Montgomery, 14 carries, 58 yards. Justin Fields, 4 carries, 23 yards. The receivers were good without Allen Robinson, who was out with injury. Darnell Mooney, 5 catches, 121 yards, and a touchdown, fueled by a 60-yard screen pass that he caught for a score. And then Marquise Goodwin, 4 catches, 104 yards, and a touchdown, and that was that 49-yard double move, busted coverage that Dalton hit him down the sideline that we thought was going to be a game winner. Of course, it was not. Roquan Smith had a monster day, 17 tackles, 15 of them were solo, 2 tackles for loss. And Robert Quinn, with Khalil Mack out, was awesome as well. He had 3.5 sacks by himself, and also had 5 tackles, 2 tackles for loss. So he was all over the field, Robert Quinn. But Bears lose 16-13. They are now 3-7. The Arizona Cardinals were in action as well. They went to Seattle without their starting quarterback, Kyler Murray, and Colt McCoy and the Cardinals beat Russell Wilson and the Seahawks on the road, which was very disappointing if you're a Seahawks fan, but good for our Arizona listeners. 23-13 was the final in that one. Arizona is now 9-2 and in first place in the NFC West. In Sunday Night Football last night, it was a wild fourth quarter. The Steelers were kind of getting blown out, and then they outscored the Chargers 27-14 in the fourth to make it a game, but lost 41-37. It was a shootout in Sunday Night Football. NBA basketball. The Bulls are now in first place in the Eastern Conference, Chief, as Tom Thibodeau and Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson came to town last night. The Knicks, having beat the Bulls a couple weeks ago, but the Bulls beat them last night 109-103 to improve to 12-5 on the season. Chief.
Are you kind of surprised that Derrick Rose is still playing halfway decently?
I'm not surprised. I mean, as long as he can stay healthy, he's still a very good player. And as he's gotten older, he's a little less what I would call reckless as far as throwing his body around when he's driving to the basket. And so that's allowing him to stay healthier. He's not quite as, you know, dynamic, I guess, in that way, but he's still a very solid player that's always been able to get shots whenever he wants to.
Yeah, well, how old is he?
If I had to guess, I would say 32, but let me look it up.
Anyway, Jan, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing okay. Just talking right wing, left wing stuff. I got caught embroiled with that.
He just turned 33 in October.
Really?
So he's 33 years old from Inglewood.
Good for him. I know he's from, where did he go to high school?
Simeon.
So, okay, he didn't go to Inglewood, then he went to,
if you're a basketball star on the South Side, you're probably going to go to Simeon or Morgan Park.
Yeah. Simeon's got a whole brand new school, and they tore the whole one down.
It was the old Kroger warehouse, remember, Tom?
Yeah.
Well, Vincennes Avenue is where the first Simeon was. I remember when it opened.
Well, the original one was right on the corner of 83rd Street.
Yeah.
That's where what's his name got shot? Jeremy
Benji Wilson.
Benji Wilson,
yeah.
Right. So, John, I listened to the Democratic lady from New York, and then Ted Cruz comes on. It's really nice to be, can I use the term gadfly? Or my grandmother used to call him one of the. You're one of the grousers or something. You don't do anything. You just criticize
sort of the armchair quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I feel that's how most people are about everything, and it's kind of annoying, especially on Twitter.
Yeah,
whether it's sports or politics or anything, it's like you're not doing anything. I mean, for God's sake.
My Notre Dame buddies. As soon as the game starts, I love them. They're turning into Boston fans before my very eyes. Every play is the wrong play. We just had a different guy calling the plays. We just said this or the other thing. What a horrible defense. What was that guy doing there? I'm like, if you ever stuck the mic in front of one of those guys and said, all right, call the next play, they have no idea. Right?
Of course not. And I mean, I feel...
Kibitzers was the name my grandmother used to use.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. I feel the same way about, people talking about the markets, people talking about politics, people talking about all kinds of stuff. 99% of the time, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's just easy to criticize when you're sitting on the sidelines doing nothing, as opposed to actually trying to do it.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, my brother, once in a great while, say something nice about me. He says, the difference between you and somebody else, you're not afraid to actually put a trade down and do it.
Exactly. Put your money where your mouth is.
You know, and you're not afraid that if it goes the wrong way, you feel you're confident you can fix it.
I would also say, for those that criticize the government all the time, and you certainly have the right to, there's no doubt about it, we're paying them. But here's an idea. Run for office.
Yeah.
Do it yourself. If you can do a better job, go raise money and do it. And I'll vote for you. But no one wants to do that. Everyone's lazy but just wants to just talk crap about everyone that is trying to do it. Now, you're an American. I'm not saying you don't have a right to do that. Do whatever you want. You certainly can. But there's people that are actually trying to do stuff, and then there's people that don't do anything and just bitch about the people that are doing stuff because they're not doing it right.
Well,
that annoys me after a while.
Well, you and I think, Maddie, one a few things we agree on, and we might even include Jen in this, is I think we've identified on the shows, or at least I feel we have, which all the people that are on here of all the different views they have, I think we've come down to two or three real serious issues with government that have really nothing to do with the people that are in there. The one is, well, I'd say there's four that I could name, and Jan, please critique me. Four that I could name is that somehow or another the influence of people outside of government with money, it's not like it hasn't always been there, has gotten overwhelming to the point where you have people in nondescript, you know, towns and God knows where are being influenced by all this outside money, which I don't think was part of the Constitution. I think that there's a huge, we seem to have found out, Manny, from just the people we interview, that there's a huge split, especially, not so much in the Senate maybe, but in the House of Representatives, between good people that get elected places, just like you're talking about. And they get in there, and there's like this 2 to 4 to 6 year, all of a sudden there's like, was it the Rubicon, or what's the river in hell? You either jump over or you don't.
Acheron or Lee, Styx. Yeah. There's three of them, Tom.
Are there three of them?
Lee is when it's the forgetting what you're leaving behind.
Yeah, somehow or another you make this decision of whether you're like all in and you're part of the 30 or 40 that actually do something versus the 400 that are just there doing God knows what, hanging out in the congressional gym. And I'm not so sure I ever knew that, Maddie, till we got onto the show that much and actually talked to people that knew those guys that are in there. And there's something seriously wrong with that. It has nothing to do with the people. I think the review process of this bill versus the Republican bills versus other Democratic bills, whoever goes in and makes the estimates of what it's going to do to people and how they lie to the population, I don't know that any individual congressman can fix that. I mean, if we elected you, and I think you tried to do the best job you could, I don't know that you can fix that. I mean, this thing of Biden's this plan has all these projections in there, and the guy will be on TV all day long, whatever he is, talking about how it's not going to cost people a dime. It's total BS. It is total BS. And just like Trump saying, don't worry, this tax decrease bill for essentially my buddies is going to, you're all going to end up with more money here. BS. Total BS. I mean, somehow or another, but I don't know how you or I, as a freshman congressman, can sort of fix that. But also, just like I talked about the difference between a trader or a money manager, is if you make a trader, you put a position in and it doesn't work out, which a lot of them don't, you have to figure out and say, well, look, this is a clunker and you got to fix. But how many bills do we have? Now, how many laws do we have? After 30 years, we know the unintended consequences are far running past the stuff that was intended. I mean, look at some of the welfare stuff that they've done for people. And all it's done over 40 years is bust up families. Or it's a total disincentive to do what people are supposed to do. I mean, I'm not saying that anybody was wrong in the beginning or thought that through, or was that conspiratorial to figure that out when they did it. But somewhere along the line, you got to keep an eye on what you did. And if it's going the wrong way, you got to fix it. Doesn't seem to be any, all of a sudden people get involved. They get involved. Well, this guy's making money on this bill. That guy's making money. 50 years later, on a crummy bill, it's still there. So, I mean, I think we've identified, shall we say, chinks in the armor that don't really have anything to do with an individual person going in there and trying to do a good job. Or am I right at all there, Maddie, or not?
I think you're absolutely right.
And the problem, too, Tom, is that by the time that these problems come to the surface and people talk openly about them, these programs are already completely entrenched. Nobody really has the desire or the ability to unravel them. and rethink them so that they become this cumbersome machinery that's always there, and maybe you tweak it a little bit every couple of years, but you don't discard it and you don't fix it. So the problem is that the long-range problems, say, from the whole welfare state of the 1960s, are just beginning to be understood by most people now. But they were clearly happening, for the last 50 years.
I think a boatload of people knew they were happening 30 years ago.
Right, but they weren't talking about it, and they certainly weren't running on it. And, you had outliers always who really didn't have much of a platform to speak from. But as far as getting anything really, to get any unity of thinking about it, it's taken a long time. So,
well, anyway, the thing that set me off on this was listening to Ted Cruz yesterday. And I think Ted has some actually really good ideas. I'd love to have him on the show. But like I said, Matty, you're talking about, you're a kibitzer. He's talking about China and how they got slave labor. But he must listen to the show. They're doing this and that, how Nike doesn't give a crap. All they want to do is sell shoes cheap. And oh, by the way, they want to, because it was all about this Chinese tennis star. Are you familiar with this story?
She's been out of sight for a while, but now there's pictures of her leaking out.
Well, she's evidently, did she win the gold medal? She did something, but she's the number one doubles team. She must not be this, she's not the number one singles person, but she's one of the number one doubles team, whatever. She's pretty damn good. So, she came out and said that the former vice premier was sexually assaulting her when she was younger. Gee, I don't have a whole lot of problem believing that. I honestly don't. I mean, whatever. And all of a sudden, she like disappeared for 3 weeks. And whenever she said that, immediately was stripped out of all the internet, so you can't find whatever she said anywhere. Evidently, so now all of a sudden they show her having lunch with all these kids and all this stuff. So she's back. So Cruz starts talking about, what are we even dealing with these people for? Well, I don't mean, it's real easy because we do it here. And say, what are we doing? I don't understand why you've got a population. They don't care. You go down to Michigan City next Saturday, and all you'll see is a huge line for the Nike store. And most of the people in line, I'll make this politically incorrect shot, most of the people in line are African American. And if anybody should be concerned about people being enslaved anywhere, it should be those people. Anybody, really, because Irishmen were always slaves in England, too. I mean, everybody should be worried about it. But I'm saying if you were to pop with a bullhorn and say, hey, what are you doing in line? These things were made with slave labor. Everybody would be throwing stuff at it. They don't want to even be reminded of that. So, I don't, anyway. So, but anyway, he's talking about, but then again, I'll ask you, Matty, you're our foil this morning. What would you do? I mean, I can't think of a more horrible spot to be in as a president. In the Oval Office, somebody's going to come in and say, these guys are using slave labor. Okay. Next guy's going to walk in and say, hey, there's more pictures of the colonel over there, Colonel Sanders, than there are of Mao. And you realize how much chicken I saw over there? What are you doing? Don't be turning these guys off. Plus, you got supply chain issues because I don't think anybody has any idea of how much they've gotten involved in our supply chain. And everybody else, if you say these jeans made in China are $5 cheaper than the ones next to them, the entire line is for the Chinese jeans. This is not an easy thing to do if you're actually the person doing it, is it? It's easy to criticize. Oh, man, what are you doing? But what would your first plan be?
I wouldn't have any idea where to start.
I wouldn't either. I mean, Trump took one route, and I don't know that that helped or hurt. I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean, it's easy to criticize there, too, but there's some correlation between the timing of a lot of the supply chain stuff and when he was doing all the tariffs and all those things. I don't have any idea that that's the cause, though, John. I mean, it could be the COVID's more of a cause than that or whatever. I have no idea. But somehow or another, if we just shut those guys off, and oh, by the way, don't give anybody here other than Google a chance in to get a loan or anything like that. I mean, how do we fix it? I mean, how do we all of a sudden make all this stuff here?
Well, I think one thing we could do, and it would be to make it harder for the Chinese to send their spies and their students / spies to U.S. universities, and to go easy on espionage cases. And there's, the news is rife with these things of people working their way into the think tanks and graduate programs and everything else. and subverting them for foreign purposes. I mean, why we take such a nonchalant approach to that is beyond me. I mean, if we were to actually supervise it and, you know, watch it and control it to some extent, I don't think we'd be in the mess we are, but we've given a green light to the Chinese about stuff like that,
right.
And as a result, we have no leverage now to push back really in any direction. I think Trump really exposed just how entrenched these interests are, so that the economic interests, the problem with our trade deficit, these are not things that people want addressed. And anybody who says we have to address them is pretty much extinguished or taken off the platform. You don't get to say those things.
Same question. I'm going to do something huge in this area. I'm going to send my friend Jan Flanagan, contributor to the show, or should we say after this assignment, former contributor to the show, down to the University of Illinois, our land-grant university. And by the way, you can explain where that all came from, because I know you know. I'm going to send you down to the Board of Trustees meeting, and I'm going to say, get these friggin' Chinese out of here. I don't want them 25% of the graduate program, or 20 or 15 or whatever it is, and because they're all playing full boat, so that people from Illinois that are going cheaper, that are now having to go to Wisconsin or Iowa or some other place, which doesn't make them bad, we want you to get these people the hell out of here, and the people paying 45 grand now, you got to replace them with actual people from Illinois paying 20 grand. Do you think you survive the trip home?
Well, it depends how I go about it. If I go in and say shut down foreign students, I won't come back in one piece. But if I were to say you got to watch this more carefully because we've got national security issues up the wazoo here, and if you participate in this, here comes, you know, a funding cut, or, you know, criminal prosecutions, as there have been in some cases. And the bigger institutions, of course, are the ones that get away with it, the Harvards and the MITs. But it's, of course, going to be unpopular from a budget standpoint, because these universities are really hungry for the tuition dollars and the foreign students pay full freight. But if you just say, well, therefore we don't have to supervise what's going on here, well, I mean, now who's at fault?
You think the University of Illinois is set up, I'm just using them as a, because we were talking about their football stadium. You think Illinois is set up to watch the watchers to try and figure out who's doing that on their campus?
I don't think they want to know. I think the less they know, the better.
But I mean, how the hell do they do it? We're talking about guys that are trained by a state. How is university security going to track down the guys that are watching the Chinese students at the University of Illinois?
Plus, a lot of the funding for these universities comes from private enterprise funds. You know, the pharmaceutical industry, the chemical industries, these are things that, you know, kind of run the show at the universities too. So the problem isn't just one of the universities, but it's the sources they get for grant money that have dictated, you don't investigate this stuff. We'll take care of that. We'll make the selection of who gets into this program and how the funding is paid out, and if you continue to get funding and so on. So the universities are really in a kind of passive position here. They're happy to have the money and have a building paid for and have it staffed, and they can put it on their prospectuses and use it for recruiting for faculty and students. But, you know, who's really running the show here? It isn't the universities at all. It's private businesses who are globalist run, and they have no interest in making this country secure from its potential enemies or making it financially, you know, viable either. It's about making their profits the biggest they can.
Well, now you've wandered over into another area. By the way, second half hour, I want to talk a little about this Kenosha thing. What, did you see this thing in Waukesha?
Yeah, with five people killed.
Priest and a bunch of Catholic school kids?
Yeah.
So let me get this straight. A bunch of guys from the south side go to Notre Dame, and somebody's going to pay this Flanagan guy to keep an eye on them and report back on what they're doing every time they go out on a Monday night instead of going to the library and report on every little thing they do. And how the hell is the University of Notre Dame's security group can be set up to watch you and make sure you're not doing that?
Well, if it were at least audited, you know, even if they didn't have people poking around in everybody's business on a daily basis. But I really think it's become a scandal that there is no supervision of what's going on at these places. And when there are big, you know, high-profile cases of espionage or trafficking in data or information, it tends to get run off of the front pages immediately because it's going to expose a much bigger problem than I think is good for the political survival of a lot of people who have enabled it. But but the problem is huge. And the fact that nobody seems interested in minimizing it, I'm not saying you can eliminate it, but even tracking it has become politically unpopular. It's political suicide. It seems.
But at what level?
I don't know how we got to that point last thing we're perfectly happy to throw technology to the four winds and let the highest bidder And the populations here, the taxpayers, are the ones who are facilitating this, and we're the ones getting screwed. So I don't.
Well, you're one of our historical great contributors to the show, Kathy Durbin, sent me some stuff a while back. I think I might have forwarded it out to you guys. But the original, I always refer to ITT and Harold Janine and that group. And I guess my question is, in that particular case, they pretty much blew up on their own. You know, they got so greedy and they screwed up. But she was talking about a group that lasted like for generations. Was it the Dutch East India Company?
Oh yeah, they were like Hudson Bay Company, places like this.
They were like the original, and it took like several governments for the Brits to throw them out of their areas. I mean, they controlled everything. They were original multinational corporations that you couldn't mess with because they were more powerful than the. And that's, you know, and right now you come as a, well, just as a personal example, when I became on the board of the CBOE, there was already direction, right, going to this, you know, less traders and bigger companies and that kind of thing, which I was absolutely dead set against, right? But I'm an affable enough person to where, on a personal level, everybody liked me, but the staff, they also knew they could outweigh me, one term, maybe two. You know, 3 years, 6 years seems like a long time, but it's not. And you can just outweigh people. And we're at the point now where these companies that never die can just outweigh the best of, well, they outweighed Trump, right? 4 years and he's gone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can just outweigh these people. And do you think, you know, if he, I mean, I'm talking about some of the good things about him. He wasn't afraid to insult somebody and to essentially call a spade a spade. And he would say this drug company, you know, where'd they get this patent and that kind of stuff. Yet they basically hunkered down for 4 years, got their bonuses, and all of a sudden he's gone. And now they're right back in the middle again. I don't know how you stop that, John. I mean, what if AT&T didn't fall from their own weight? What if Litton Industries didn't fall from their own weight? It's not like this is the first time this has happened. I mean, it's bigger now, I think, just because the world's sort of gotten smaller in a lot of ways. But, I mean, we've never really had a strategy, when I say we, from the Dutch East India Company to actually say, no, way too powerful, get these people the hell out of here. I don't see how you'd do that. And if you did, it would take 10 years in court, which is 2.5 presidential terms. I mean, I don't have any idea what the solution is for one of these guys overstepping their bounds, which they are. The Chinese are, but I don't know if they're any worse than Google.
But the thing now, Tom, is that the media is part of this enterprise, and that was not always the case. There was always pushback because there was a much more varied and a much more violently opposed, you know, dynamic going on with press outlets. And what's happened now is something that, if it was ever foreseen, you know, by the people who founded the country, I don't think they would have, you know, foreseen the extent to which it's corrupted everything. So whatever possibility there is, and there always was the possibility for pushback, and you can see that in political trends going back in the country's history, nationally and locally. But the possibility of that happening now is reduced when you don't have opposing viewpoints tolerated or aired, and you end up with a population that is seduced by a story that is convenient to the people who are running the show, and there really isn't any credibility given to anybody saying the opposite. And look at Trump as the example of that. In any other climate, I think, if Trump, a Trump-like president, were confronted with the situation Trump was handed, you would have had lots of the press behind him to back him up and to give him, you know, a platform.
Well, the guy was like, he was like vinegar in your beer.
Right, but that never stopped people in the past from who were equally toxic to people from getting a lot of getting a lot of media.
Name me anybody who was as toxic to anybody as he was.
We need a good dose of toxicity, Tom, because we're being poisoned anyway.
Well, but how much? I guess as we're barking up this tree, how much of it is? Boy, I hate it when people do this. you know, when somebody, matter of fact, I listened to Lori Lightfoot yesterday, and I was ready.
Yeah, you want toxic?
Yeah, I mean, this idea that though the murders are the result of generations of lack of investment in black and brown communities. Well, all right, I don't know that that's a solution necessarily. The solution tomorrow is the guy shooting at somebody out of the car window is either to riddle the car with machine gun bullets or put the guy away for the rest of his life. That's the current solution. Those are the cards we're being dealt, right? Yes, would have been better if when that kid or that guy was 6 years old, his family life was better and the education was better. Yeah, but I don't know what I can do about that now. All I can do now is stop him from shooting somebody else, if I can, which it doesn't look like I can do that either. But I guess when you get down this road, Jan, you don't. The solutions are elusive, but the will. How can you? Example I use is Franklin Roosevelt. I mean, I think he had enough information in 1939 for sure of just exactly where Nazi Germany was going. I mean, the guy talked to Churchill all the time and blah blah blah. You know the pressure Churchill was under to essentially make this separate peace from Chamberlain and all the rest of these guys. It was a group of them. It wasn't just Chamberlain. And Churchill just say, no, no matter what deal we make with this guy, we can't trust him. On a personal level, he knew Hitler more than anybody else did. I don't know why, whether he read his book, whether he just had a sense of it, but he just said, no matter what it is, we cannot have a deal, even if we wanted to, because the guy's untrustworthy. Look at all the other deals everybody's had with him, and he breaks every one of them. So, anyway, so Roosevelt was very cognizant of the fact that he couldn't go ahead of public opinion too fast. And yet, here we are now trying to go ahead of public opinion. We've got, yes, do I like the fact that somebody of a big corporation owns the Washington Post and something else? No, but they're collectively, the way we stop that is everybody not being afraid to throw their 50 cents or dollar down to buy the goddamn Sun-Times every day and actually have them hire a few people maybe to write something that isn't tainted. I'm not saying everything in the Washington Post is tainted. We don't want to do that, John. We don't want to pay for anything, and yet we're pissed off that a few people control the stuff. You can't have it both ways, collectively as a society. I mean, you and I are going to rail about the lack of independent news groups, but nobody wants to pay for them. You can't give anybody a job there.
Well, even two times if people could pay for it, they wouldn't read it, because reading has become kind of an antique hobby. It seems.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
This problem is, and this is not by accident that this has happened. Reading as a way of actually learning about stuff has become sort of delegitimized in our schools. The idea of assigning a complicated text, even in a college class, and asking people to make up their minds about it and understand it and analyze the structure of an essay or the validity of the sources or the slant of an art, that's beyond college students today. I don't think you could succeed as a teacher in a classroom or with your department if you were giving out assignments like that, because the skills aren't there. And that's not accidental. I mean, that's certainly been a part of the dumbing down of everything, that people do not have analytical skills to smell a fraud or to complain about it in articulate ways. And even if they could, they don't have an opportunity to get that opinion around. You look at the letters to the editor, so-called, in newspapers these days, and they're all just puff pieces by people who are, you know, presidents of interest groups or think tanks, and sometimes the Tribune. Every newspaper is like that now. There is no individual voice, really, in any given day in the letters to the editor. That's by design, too. We don't care what a thinking person would say about this, because who cares what a thinking person thinks? We're not a thinking person. We don't value thinking anymore. So,
but it comes down to, I say this way too much, it comes down to the money. Follow the money. I mean, if you were a writer or whatever, guy who does pictures for U.S. News and World Report or Time Magazine or Newsweek 40 years ago, you felt your employer, well, it was the magazine, but it was the people who bought the darn thing every week. You weren't beholden to the government, to some big company who took pity on you because the thing was going under and saved your magazine, and now you got to do what they want to do. You weren't beholden to them, but now you are. Or there is no magazine. Right?
I mean, and even the magazines that pose as being, you know, sort of gadflies are really, you know, thinly veiled attempts to make it look like there's an opposition out there. Anything that would really oppose, you know, the prevailing discussion or the direction it's taking isn't given much seriousness. It's not given, you know, credibility, and it's ridiculed pretty openly. You know, the thing I think a lot about in my declining years now, Tom, is how literacy is a very slowly swinging pendulum. And it took a long time for literacy to be widely shared, and it's still not widely shared. You know, you look at whole parts of the world that people are illiterate or semi-literate, and, you know, they have very little knowledge of their own personal history. They have oral traditions, but they don't have much in the way of written accounts of stuff. It's taken a long time just to get to this point, and it seems like we're regressing now more than we're making progress. So I suspect that the pendulum swings are going to go on back and forth over, you know, however many millennia we're privileged to have this planet. But I don't see that the current trend is reversing itself in 4 years or 8 years or 400 years. It's going to take a lot longer time than that to become more literate than we've let ourselves
well, if
become.
Well, I guess if you look at the, on a lot of levels here, I'm trying to cliff notes this down, but a lot of people laugh at, you know, the older generation or other stuff, and they say, well, what do we even need that stuff for? You have a group of people who's convinced that their access to news is 10 times better than it ever has been, while at the same time, there's probably 30% or 40% less reporters than there was. Okay, so if you can reconcile that in your brain, you can do a way better job than I can, because I don't see how you do that. But, I mean, most people would reconcile that. But some of the institutions that we have, I think, John, the more I study, and this could be very fleeting. I mean, it was like that in Greece for how long? And maybe once again in Rome for 40, 50 years, and then they became a corrupt society. The idea of the middle class, which we poo-poo here now, what do you want that for? Why do you... or the idea that everybody gets to read a lot of stuff and we challenge things in government and institutions, that is such a rare phenomenon, and I don't think we value it near as much, especially younger people. The older you get, the more you realize how rare that is. I mean, the middle class could end up being really a 45-year phenomenon between the end of World War II and 1995. Right, it's a 50-year phenomenon. That's it. Name me another middle class ever in the history of man. Ever.
I can't think of one. And you know, that the reach of that, you know, period and that generation who had buying power and comforts of life and relative peace, I mean, at a certain level, and had some control over their destiny in this country and had representation and had good representation. And we've always been a divided society, there's no question about that, but when it came to the more reasonable heads prevailing, I think we've seen our high water mark. It's been, you know, a downward path for quite some time now, really.
Well, I want to shift gears a little bit to this thing in Kenosha.
Well, you brought up land-grant colleges.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. How did that all happen?
Well, you know, there had been attempts going back, I think, in the 1840s or 50s to make it possible for all this land that the U.S. government had acquired by various treaties, wars, whatever, because they didn't have any way of making it usable or profitable. There was no kind of system for making it give a return to anybody. The idea was floated to give land to the states with the idea that in exchange for this grant of free land that was federally owned, you would either use that land or the proceeds from the sale of that land to build universities that were dedicated to the agricultural and mechanic arts. So the Texas A&Ms, Alabama A&M, places like that, this is where that idea comes from, that this was to be a kind of resisting force to the old model of universities that were primarily based on the classics, you know, religion, theology, to prepare people for the ministry. This is now, let's use the university system to expand our ability to grow things, build things, invent things. And the formula was 30,000 acres were granted to each state for each head of representation they had in Congress. So your two senators plus however many representatives you had, you take that number, multiply it by 30,000.
So you had to be a state.
According to the 1860 census, when the act was passed in 1862, it was based on the 1860 numbers.
So you had to be a state at the time.
Yeah.
So how did Oklahoma ended up with a land grant university?
Well, the act was amended. You know, in 1862, the southern states, which were in rebellion, were not included in this. They were later added to it, as were other states that were admitted after the act was passed. So I think every state now, and even territories too, Guam, Micronesia, I mean, they have versions of land grant colleges. Some of these are tribal colleges, which, because the land that was given was originally owned by a tribe in that locality, these have been now dedicated to educating the surviving members of those tribes. Some of them are community colleges, you know, trade schools, and so on. So the states have been able to modify this for their own particular demographic histories. But, you know, it was kind of an interesting idea that it was not just literacy that we're interested in promoting now, because, you know, we have schools, you know, even if they're just one-room schoolrooms for, you know, schoolhouses for teaching writing and arithmetic. But now we need more advanced thinking about what to do with all this energy we've got in this country. And we've got all this land that the federal government doesn't want to farm it. Let the states build educational institutions.
Well, Jan,
it's a brilliant idea.
Well, all right, you see, you got yourself a territory, Missouri Territory, Illinois Territory, was originally the Ohio Territory. Well, you gave all the land to railroads, right? You just said, okay, you're going to build a railroad, we'll give you, you know, whatever it was, 5 miles times your railroad's going to be 100 miles long. You get 5 miles on either side, or 2 miles, or how it was. That's what they gave. They gave you the right to build it, and they gave you enough land to sell off for the money to build it, correct? And that's
right.
What they, but then if you're a university, obviously you've got something. And in Chicago, for those that don't know, when you built the I&M Canal, the entire city was essentially broken up into the grid system, and every other square mile was given to the I&M Canal Company, whoever the hell they were, to essentially sell off what nobody was here except Indians, a few people. Not denigrating anybody, I'm just saying there wasn't anybody there really to buy it, but that's what they got to build the I&M Canal, which essentially put Chicago on the map and blah, blah, blah. So, but how did somebody, if you wandered into Illinois and you just saw a nice piece of property and you landed there, how did you ever get title to that property?
Well, you would petition the land agent for that part of the territory or that county, and these counties were configured very differently in the early days of the state. The counties were very small.
I'm saying before it was even a state.
Illinois, huge up here, but they all had land management powers. So you would petition through them, and the land agent would, you know, the federal government's agent would, act as the seller in the land. Whatever parcel you were interested in purchasing, it would be surveyed, and you would get what's called a patent. Just like a patent on an invention from the federal government for that piece of land. And that begins the running of the chain of title down to current time. So in anything, you know, really since 1800, when the rectangular system was devised, you've got a title that goes back at some point to a government patent. And, of course, there's treaties before that and so on, by which the government was, you know, able to acquire this land legally or under duress or, you know, with some pretty shady dealings too, or by conquering the former owner. But the patent is the triggering document from which land titles now stem.
So everything was
here, you know, you can trace it back to a patent somewhere.
So when did all this surveying take place?
That's Jefferson, and he devised the whole rectangular system of measurement in his head and extrapolated it to lands west of the Alleghenies, which had not, you know, had been laid out and had land transactions for hundreds of years without reference to this kind of a system. But after the Louisiana Purchase, Jefferson said, look, we got all this territory. How are we going to convey it? How are we going to even describe it? So the rectangular system is, you know, Jefferson's mission to all these surveyors who went out and laid these baselines horizontally and then meridian lines vertically, and you get this magnificent system. You know, and of course, GPS now is, you know, tied right in. I mean, this almost presaged a GPS type of system to correspond.
So you see all this property on the other side of the mountains. We're going to call that the Ohio Territory, and people are moving there. So we're going to go out there. And we're going to somehow survey the place. And somebody wants land for railroads. We're going to give them land for that. Of course, that was after 1838, but not much more. 1860, maybe 1855. And we're going to talk about some canals, but all this stuff kind of is all going on at once.
Right. The canal even predates the rectangular system, because the land, they knew that there could be a canal here that would eventually connect Lake Michigan to the Mississippi. So I think it's the Treaty of Greenville is like 1790 something, carved out what was called, you know, canal land, and it set up boundary lines running from northeast to southwest. Everything northwest of the line was free and open to the people, the indigenous tribes that lived there. Everything southwest of another line that was open to them. But you had this little channel of land that, you know, the U.S. has rights to that. So this became, you know, it was eventually surveyed at a different time from all the adjoining lands. So that's why you get this disruption of lines here. And you get, like, Rogers Avenue on the north side. That's one of the boundary lines. And it eventually didn't actually mesh very neatly because the surveying was done at different times. But the canal idea goes way back.
I mean, it goes back to Father, what's his name, Marquette.
Yeah. I mean, there was an understanding that you could do this, and you had to portage your boats over marshy areas where the rivers weren't, you know, navigable. But eventually you did get to the great, you know, Mississippi. So even stories that were told by people who had lived here for hundreds of years to the new settlers, well, this is money. We can make this navigable.
So, Maddie, the idea, the story was, this is why you always wanted to be chief, right? Before there was a canal, when you got to the Chicago River and you wanted to get to the Plains River and all the way down to New Orleans, where the hell you were going, there was like a mud lake sort of in the middle, and you could actually... The flat bottom boat couldn't really get across that easily unless you pushed it, right? But you were slogging along in essentially this mud. So the captain got to go to the bar and sit there while his gang pushed the thing through the mud and got your ass eaten by mosquitoes and God knows what else. And when you got to the other, depending on how much, you know, water or how much rain you'd had, when it gets to the other end, they'd come get you in the bar, you'd hop on, you'd be the captain again, and hey, you guys stink, you better go, like, take a bath, and off you'd go. It's always better to be chief, right?
By hook or by crook, you get there, right?
So, John, we had a big discussion yesterday regarding this thing in Kenosha, and I have a sort of a different tack to this whole thing. I'm certainly not going to second-guess what juries do and films and stuff. I mean, they I'm sure were privy to everything, but I have a very simple question on the legal end of this. And since you still are an attorney, even though you try and say you weren't, I'm going to say there's three different things that have happened now in the last 6 months. One is our buddy from Notre Dame's wife getting brutally shot down in Dan Ryan, and the people being caught and being let go because they allegedly copped a plea that some other car shot at them first, and they were just returning fire, and our buddy just happened to be in the middle, and that's what happens when you get in the middle and you're not watching out for yourself, and so she basically deserved to die. So that was basically the decision from the Kim Fox's group, correct? Without any regard to having loaded guns in a car, discharging a weapon in the city, anything like that. We forgot all about that, right? And then the one on the west side, for my attorney buddies that I meet on Tuesday and Wednesday night, were absolutely aghast at the video of people shooting back and forth on these people in a house. It was like a Western movie, and they've got videos of guys standing there shooting guns at this house, and they were all called co-combatants, and nothing was file there, even though somebody died, and nothing about discharging guns in the city, nothing about having loaded guns without a permit, nothing, any of that stuff was all kind of thrown out. Now here we got this guy in Kenosha, and again, I'm not going to second guess jury or anything. How exactly now is, I know, because I asked this stupid question once, just to be an ass, like, oh yeah, once in a while. Long before you moved into the place upstairs, Maddie, there was a time where every time the street lights went out, I don't know if somebody knew about it or if somebody was paid to tell them or something, but there'd be two or three car break-ins in the two or three nights that the street lights were out until they got the lights back on. This is way back, right? And, which was really a pain in the ass. So I go by this truck. Two nights later, somebody steals the tailgate. Third night, the car across the street's broken on. This is where I'm walking scruff at 3:30 in the morning. And so I call the alderman and I go, hey, you know, is it legal for me to carry like a shotgun down the street loaded walking my dog in the morning? Oh, sir, you can't do that. You know that. Why not? Well, because you can't carry a loaded gun down the street in the city of Chicago, really kind of anywhere. Well, maybe out in, you know, Colorado you could, in the mountains, but basically you're not supposed to do that. And I said, well, here's the deal. Two out of the last three nights, you got a bunch of thieves out here basically doing damage at 3:30 in the morning, and that's when I walk my dog. So I really don't want to be out there bumping into a group like this doing their dastardly deeds without having some protection about me. Well, you can't do that. Now, fast forward to Kenosha. We got a guy who goes to some place where he knows people are going to be probably not agreeing with each other on every point. How's that for a... And he's going to bring a loaded assault rifle to the party. And sure enough, something bad happens and two people are dead. Now, at the instant it happened, was he protecting himself? I don't know. The jury said yes, so I'm going to go with a yes. So I'll roll with the jury. Point is, how did it get to that point? It's now... Okay, why did the judge dismiss all the other charges? So now, can I read into this? That I can shoot whenever I feel threatened. I get to shoot at people, even if it's no matter what kind of gun it is, whether it's a tank, whether it's a pistol. I get to shoot at anybody I hit. Hey, I felt threatened by the guy over there at the end of the block. Yeah, but there were 100 people between you and the end of the block. That doesn't matter. That's their fault. John, where are we going with this? How does this guy not? How does he not have one charge against him?
Which guy?
Any of them. Any of the three.
Well, you know, Tom, we reached a point where if the police take, and they're instructed to take a very offhand approach to a threat, you know, you got somebody dancing on the hood of my car, they're damaging it, I don't want this to happen, can you send a cop out to arrest this person? The cops may or may not come out. If somebody is, you know, coming up your front walk with a gun pointed at you and you're on your front steps and they say, get out of the way, I'm coming in, you can shoot them. If you got a gun, you're on your property, you're defending it. If the cops won't defend you, then I think you have to defend it yourself. Defend your life and your property. That's ancient. If you don't have the right to do that, if you like what the prosecutors were saying in the Rittenhouse trial, you know, you have to get beaten up every now and then. It's like, says who?
No, but
what planet are you from?
I'm saying, where if all of a sudden there's a demonstration. There used to be demonstrations down here all the time, by the way, when corn prices went up. Like the farmers would show up or went down, and they'd be pissed off at the traders. All right, and every once in a while, a couple times since I've been here, my brother would know more, but they actually drove their tractors down here and drove them around the Board of Trade like in protest. So if I'm a guy who likes traders and realize there's no connection between the traders and the price is people outside the floor and not on the floor, but you know, again, not many people know that. Now, do I just go, man, there might be some bleep hole out there that messes with me. I think I'll bring a loaded shotgun to this party. And hopefully nobody throws a punch at me because I'm going to blast them. John, when did that become okay?
Well, it became okay, like it or not, when Lori Lightfoot didn't call in the National Guard during the George Floyd riots here in Memorial Day weekend and then the later looting sprees that, you know, resulted in, you know, millions of dollars of destruction and you know,
yeah, but I'm drawing, you're as a good attorney, you're deflecting me. I'm not talking about somebody coming by our building here and trying to bust into our office. I guess I can roll with that. And I'm inside and somebody's coming in to do harm to me. I'm talking about bringing a loaded gun to a demonstration. How do I get to do that?
Well, if you think that nobody else is going to do anything who's there, and the cops aren't trustworthy enough to bring law and order back, you're now saying to people, "You, this is not your responsibility. You know, if you don't like what Rittenhouse did, and it's perfectly okay if you don't like it." I think the self-defense claim, though, that he made is pretty incontrovertible from looking at the testimony.
I've no problem with that. If the guy went to swing at him and he dropped him between the eyes and it turns out he hit him too hard and the guy hit his head on the ground, I'll roll with that. I'm talking about where has it ever become legal out of my house for me to grab an assault rifle and go to a gathering?
I don't know if it's legal. If it's legal to carry the gun, you have every right to have it.
No, it's not. I don't think it's legal at all to carry a loaded gun down the street. A loaded,
but you concealed carry, you can't have
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, can I just walk down the street with a loaded shotgun? I think the answer is no.
Well, if you're brandishing it, of course, you're inviting attacks from other people too, then it's on you. If you're posing a threat to someone and they fear for their lives and they shoot you, they'll claim self-defense. So it's not a good mix to have people walking around brandishing guns, but it's what we have.
Well,
and firing him with impunity, innocent people.
What I'm trying to do is stop that. The idea that
one way you don't stop it, Tom, is by what Court TV and all the media outlets in the country have done with the way the Rittenhouse trial was portrayed in the press. And it's instructive, I think, to notice that they're not giving any attention to the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. About to go underway here.
Well, I'm very aware of how the media is doing it one way or the other. But
they want this kind of discussion they want the Rittenhouses to be intimidated, so they don't do this. Or when they do it, it gets mad.
Well, I want him to be intimidated too. I don't want him going to a farmers rally in the Civic Center Plaza with a loaded gun in case he runs into somebody he doesn't like. Does that mean everybody brings one?
Well, if the police don't do it, then that's when you get militias.
Well, but they're saying that
in history, if you have a military that doesn't do anything or doesn't respond in a timely enough way to save your life or your property, of course you'll step in. You can't blame people for filling that void. It's a shame there is the void, but the cops intimidated.
All right,
now
I want to say
they can't do their job.
We got to nip. I want the guy arrested who shot Tiny's wife. I want the guys on the west side arrested that were shooting in that house. And I want this guy arrested for a gun charge.
We got to get rid of our state's attorney and our mayor and a whole
Well, that's fine, but
too.
I don't want any of that stuff. I mean, that's just me.
And I don't mean to do away with them. I mean, we have to get rid of them through a peaceful process. I'm not inciting violence here. But we're not going to get any kind of redress for mutual combat situations like we've seen with the people we've got running the show here. They don't want that stuff prosecuted.
Mutual combat should be arguing over a drink.
Yeah, who cares? I mean, if you can arrest somebody, at least you make somebody talk, perhaps. You arrest more people, and you eventually stop the mutual combatants
if somebody's dead, somebody needs to pay for it. It's just whatever. Anyway, John, thank you very much. Talk to you later in a week. But SP Feeders up 11. Come back with Mr. Mike Hart.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Just met Weber on the board. S&P futures up 13.50. NASDAQ futures up 70.50. So, Maddie, are you with me? There's one of the guys on the floor when I was still trading. There's a place out west that you heard about. You go out there for 6 days. It's a day revolver, a day automatic, 2 days rifle, 2 days shotgun. Or was it 1 day assault rifle? Are you with me?
Out west as in the west side of Chicago, or out west as in, like, I think it was Arizona?
The city right across from Laughlin. It's a Bullhead City or something. It was out there.
Okay.
Are we in? Can you imagine the characters we'd find out there at that class?
I would not be in, but I would love to hear about it.
She wouldn't let you go?
She would let me go. I have no interest.
I just, all I know is we'd meet some characters. I bet we'd have stories to tell for the rest of our lives. Dow futures up 41. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 56.3%, FTSE down 13.9%. Again, they've got some issues over COVID. They've shut down in Austria, and a couple other places are wavering as well. CAC around down 15.2%. Asia, Nikkei up 28.1%, sorry. Shanghai up 21.6%, Hang Seng down 98.4%. So not much going on there, a little bit of a mixed bag as well. Friday, like we mentioned earlier, Dow was down 268, which is 0.8%. S&P down 6.1%, but the NASDAQ was up 63, and NASDAQ's been up like every day. The difference in the QQQs, which is the NASDAQ, which is up every single day, and the Russell's down like 3.5-4% in the last week and a half. It's kind of crazy how even the indices are flying all over the place or in different directions. Bonds, 10-year, I'm showing up 3, but it's right where it was Friday morning, 1.57. So went down 3 after showing up, it's back up that 3. Bond minus 0.32. Japan positive 0.07, where that has been forever. Well, get a load of this. 75.53 down 41 cents. Maddie, we were $84, what, 3 weeks ago? 2.5 weeks ago?
Yeah.
That's a huge. Yet my gas prices did not go down at all. This is outrageous. Brent down 52 cents, 78.37. So I only put in a few gallons thinking I'll make it to next week where they have to come down. What do you think? Natural gas down 29 cents. Check this out, 476. This is now going into winter. It's $1.30 where it was 2 months ago, which is nowhere near winter. This is crazy. Arbob, 221. We've got gold down 10 bucks, 1840. Silver, 2479 unchanged. Copper down 3 cents, 436. And we've got crypto. Bitcoin's down 954 to 58,583, which is, what is that, 10%? Less than the 63,000 it hit maybe a week ago Monday. Maddie, what do you got for us? Crappy weather sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash on northbound Lakeshore Drive. It's happening just before Belmont Avenue, and that crash is blocking the right lane, causing us stop-and-go traffic. So expect delays if you're heading northbound on Lakeshore Drive as it's starting to back up around 2800 North there, which is Diversey. I don't think there's a Diversey exit, but right there around Diversey as we back up from that crash near Belmont on the northbound side. No issues on the southbound side of Lakeshore Drive. Eden's still looking good. Kennedy traffic starting to build, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford looking good so far. We seem to have slightly lighter traffic than normal due to the holiday week, I would say. Some folks taking this full week off. But we do have one other crash in the area, and that's down south. I-80 eastbound, just before 183rd Street, there's a crash causing stop-and-go traffic on the eastbound side of I-80, so keep that in mind. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, but cold and blustery temperatures, high winds, as well as very windy last night. Sunny with a high of 35, but it'll feel like it's in the 20s all day. Right now it is clear and 27 with wind chills at 17. For our Phoenix listeners, cloudy skies today, but a high of 81. Right now it's overcast and 56 degrees in Phoenix. In sports yesterday, the Bears are now 3-7. They fell again to the Ravens. 16-13 was the final in that one. Justin Fields left the game in the third quarter with a rib injury. We'll learn more on the extent of that injury later on today. Andy Dalton came in relief and played pretty well and got the Bears the lead late, but they gave it right back and lost to the Ravens 16-13. Arizona Cardinals are 9-2. They beat the Seahawks up in Seattle 23-13. Sunday Night Football, it was a wild one in L.A. as the Chargers hung on to beat the Steelers 41-37. NBA basketball, the Bulls have the best record in the Eastern Conference after beating the Knicks 109-103 at the UC. Suns have now won 12 straight. They're 13-3 in the Western Conference. They beat the Nuggets 126-97. Blackhawks are playing good hockey since the coaching change. They've won 6 of their last 10 as they won on the road yesterday 1-0 over Vancouver. And it was the Coyotes topping the Kings 2-1. Chief.
We have Mike?
We do.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing great, Chief. How you doing?
All right, so you're almost 100%?
Almost 100% on what?
you're out running? Not exactly, huh?
No, not quite yet, but I'm getting there.
All right, good, buddy. I have one quick, before we start talking about the Fed announcement, evidently is going to be today, right, on who's going to be the... appointed to be the new Fed chair or the old Fed chair. I have a football question for you two guys. And this is, again, I read all these opinions all the time. I said one of the guys who's almost single-handedly changed the game of football. And, from the early 70s. And he was an Oakland player. And, I was surprised who this guy said was in there. Did you have an idea who I'm talking about?
What's the question?
It was about individual stars that totally changed the game of football. And this is a guy, his pick for number one.
Okay, who would that be?
This was Ray Guy.
Okay, the punter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, I only know about him because the College Football Award for Best Punter is the Ray Guy Award.
Well, he was a guy that, he was a guy. How's that for, but he, before then, it was always distance of kick and then the amount of return. He was the first time where it was hang time and it was net.
Yeah, which makes sense.
When he totally changed, and he was one of the
now they also track inside the 10-yard line, inside the 20-yard line, and I wonder if he helped start that revolution too.
Because they said he totally changed the game, and it really helped Oakland out for several years before other people caught up. I remember there was a guy from the Irish played Florida State. This was not long after I graduated, and it was before the stadium got bigger, and I was in the top row. And his left-footed kicker from Florida State, who ended up having a huge NFL career. He might even be a Hall of Fame punter. I forget the guy's name, though. I'm like home brain dead about that. First time ever, Manny, all of a sudden this guy's kicking. His second kick, I go, wait a minute, that ball is going over my head. it really was, guys never used to do that. Those two guys came along. And he was, he ended up being a holder and everything else, but he lasted what? How many years? 15?
Yeah, they realized that hang time was just as important as distance because you can actually outkick your coverage, and now that's become kind of a cliche saying to outkick your coverage, but you actually can. If you kick it too far, too low, then your coverage doesn't have time to get down there, and it leads to a great return, and then as you said, the net is really not that much of a gain. But if you can kick far and have hang time and allow your coverage to get down there, then it can result in a fair catch where they have no return or, you know, a small return. Or you can angle it out of bounds, and get some bounce to it as well. And it's really become an art form.
Yeah, before him, it was, you had guys who were dedicated punters, but they all started out playing like maybe another position. And then after they didn't play the other position anymore, they just stayed as a punter. Bears had a guy forever named Bobby Joe Green.
Yeah.
But he actually was an end, and once in a while, if they were kicking butt on some team, he'd grab the other helmet and run in and play in for a few plays just to say he played type of thing.
Well, I went to the Illinois-Iowa football game on Saturday, as I mentioned earlier, and both teams must have NFL prospects at punter and kicker.
Really?
Because it was actually a joy watching the special teams. The Illinois guy made a 50-some yard field goal. The Iowa guy made a couple long field goals. Both punters were just kicking the ball, deep. and pinning guys inside the 10 back and forth. And then Iowa had a kick return for a touchdown on a kickoff. I mean, it was just like a special teams art form watching that game. The problem was the offenses and defenses weren't very good.
I thought Iowa had like the world's best offensive line. Can those guys get hurt or what?
Well, they have their center is the number one center in the country. That's going to be a first round pick. But the rest of their line is very young this year, so they're a little inconsistent.
Okay.
But typically, yeah, they do have a top-rated offensive line every year. And their offensive line is still very good compared to most schools. But by their standard, it's a little bit young this year.
But the center's going to be...
He's all-world, yeah. He's an All-American, first-team All-Big Ten, first-team All-American, and first-round pick, likely.
I saw him play a couple times. He's like a man among boys.
Yeah. I guess he was a great wrestler, too. Like, he could have been a national champion wrestler if he stuck with it.
Speaking of which, if you were watching the Kansas City game yesterday, they just, talk about a blast in the past. Mike might. Remember the name Curly Culp?
I do not.
I actually don't.
He was, when Kansas City was one of the first teams that went to the, I think they went to a 3-4 for a while, but he was a nose tackle, and he was a heavyweight wrestling champ. He was on their first Super Bowl team. He was a spectacular player, Hall of Famer. Evidently, he just got diagnosed, yesterday with stage 4, some kind of cancer, but, he was a huge popular guy in Kansas City. I think he played his whole career there in a whole bit. He was like Eddie O'B or something here. He was that kind of guy for those guys, and that's a shame. He had quite the career. So, Mike, we have this sort of an interesting thing. You and I have been talking about it kind of every week in regards to the Fed is whatever. You still got to be real careful. Shorten these bonds. I mean, you've got to, because the Fed going to roll over you. I mean, 2 weeks ago, they put, $100 billion in the market. I mean, so it's...
Right.
Now, you even have a guy like Siegel coming out yesterday. I'm not saying he's a, big mouthpiece or anything, but he's talking about the day they actually, even though everybody knows they have to stop doing this because of the inflation, the fact is, they haven't stopped. They're still acting like...
That's right.
And he's convinced that one of these days they're going to have to... They're going to make the call and say, whenever, how much you want us to buy today? No, we want you to start selling. I mean, I don't know if that call is ever going to get made. I think they're just going to start buying less. But he's saying that we're, no matter what, no matter how many people are allegedly preparing for it, we're not there yet. Even because they're doing exactly the opposite of what they're sort of saying they're going to do, and what other people think they should do. And he thinks the market has a huge comeuppance because they don't believe any of this stuff until it actually happens.
It's been so long since we've seen some type of normalcy in the market that I think you're right, Chief. I don't see like a very a likely outcome being that they just one day say sell. I don't see that being the way they're able to deal with what they've already sort of done to the economy as a whole. We are where we are, but we're at a very high point. Things are looking great in a sense of asset appreciation, but you bring up the point of inflation, which we talk about every week. That's going to be the kicker here, is we are causing inflation, and there's got to be a solution or a management of it going forward. We know over time, if we just keep this type of scenario up, we're going to kill ourselves in inflation.
Which we're, it's interesting. I mean, you guys probably wouldn't. I mean, Maddie for sure would not notice. I won't say nefarious, but an amazing shift in the nomenclature and how you report inflation now from when it was in the 70s and early 80s. If you read every article now, no matter where it is, they're gonna tell you that the inflation rate is now up to 6.2%, correct?
That's right.
Because they're gonna say every month now they're keeping track of where we were in relation to that month last year. So what they're saying is that November to the October number is 6.2% higher than the October month last year versus September was 5.4% ahead of the. But what we used to do, I say we, people are this old, what we used to do is we'd say, wait a minute, we were up 0.9% in October times 12, sounds to me like we're talking about you know, 10.8 is the number, not 6.2.
Right. Yep.
And now we've got it to the point where, you know, it's not the way we're counting it. Now, what I'm going to say is count it as you wish. The problem there now becomes, if it continues to go higher like it did in those days, and if you get a Fed chairman coming in to fight it by putting the world in a recession and going through all the stuff we went in this late 70s and 80s, which was a horrible world, if we start doing that, and this is now the way you count it, you got it going up so slow, you're going to have it going down so slow. So you're going to end up in the same spot Volcker was, where I think you kept the brakes on way too long. But now,
right?
Because now, you know, you reap what you sow, as they say. But I mean, right now, the rate isn't 6.2. Even if you're charitable, and you say, okay, the last 2 months we got what, a 9, and we got a 5.4. All right, so what is that? That's a 7.2 times 6, right? I mean, your the 7.2 times, you know, is your average times 12. You're still up to 8 point something, not 6.2, right?
That's right, yep.
So why all of a sudden, if that's happening, that you've got this, well, we're putting all our money in the Qs. I mean, have you ever seen two indices where the Russell is getting absolutely annihilated and the Qs are going up? It's got to be an 8% spread in those two indices in the last 10 trading days? I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, we know the IWM or the, you know, Russell 2000. It has a tendency to move a little bit more. It's got a little bit more volatility embedded within it, just because we're dealing with smaller size companies that tend to have a little more volatility. But you're right. This amount of basically detachment from the two indices is pretty rare to see. I haven't seen it before.
Well, just as an example, on the 1st of November, which wasn't that long ago, the QQQs were, say, 366, and now they are 405. So that's what, 40 points? It's 10% in essentially, what, how many days? 15 trading days? That's kind of a lot.
Sure.
Now, the Russell, which obviously is another pretty big, I'll get it November 1st here. November 1st isn't so bad, because it was 234, and now it's 233. But it was up to 240, where am I here? The highest was 240-something. So it's actually down 4% in the last few weeks. So it's unchanged and actually spiked up and is down 4% at the same time the other one was up 5%. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Right.
I mean, how one class of company can be doing so much better than another.
Exactly. I mean, it's the rotation of assets and it's the rotation of where money's getting put. You sometimes see this towards the end of the year where things get rotated out of small caps and get put into, we saw it last year, I think it got rotated out of small caps into large caps, but this is a really fast move for, you know, when you're looking at the small caps relative to technology and the QQQs. I don't have a good explanation for it. I can't really speculate on, you know, what exactly the storyline is behind it, other than it's interesting to look at. You look over at volatility and you say, well, you know, what's the story there? What's at least volatility telling us? And, you know, we still have volatility. We're, you know, even with markets hanging out near the highs, when I say markets, I'm looking at SPY or the S&P 500, but, you know, markets are hanging out near the high, and we're still seeing an 18 print or so on VIX, which is, relatively speaking, you know, a good amount of volatility still embedded in there.
What do you make of, two things. It's hard, first of all, without a whole lot, I don't always criticize other people, but without a lot of very rigorous study, which would require you and I to somehow stop the world's history for about 3 weeks to get 15 people to help us. I wonder, and I've been speculating this for sure as long as you've been on the show with us and other people, There was an article I sent around, everybody, that investors are selling off shares of Walmart and Target after the discounters pledged to absorb some higher costs rather than passing it on to consumers. They're saying that. I wonder, mavens that you guys both are, that the difference is that the bigger companies, since they are somewhere between monopolists or oligopolists or duopolists or cartels, they have incredibly more pricing power than smaller companies. And for the population and politicians to just figure that out, I have a one-word answer to them. Duh. You think that maybe that Home Depot and Lowe's have more pricing power than even as bad as some areas are in terms of lack of competition, where there's only one Walmart or whatever. I'm going to say the general retail is way more competitive than your lumber and home stuff. I mean, you can still find people outside the group, but by and large, I think it's way more concentrated in that area, and I think it's way more concentrated in your Googles. It's way more concentrated in certainly the Microsofts. I mean, they can charge whatever damn well please. I mean, it kind of, if you were watching just to see how powerful they are, you're getting your answer, I think.
I absolutely think so. I completely agree with that. I think, you know, the companies out there today that were trading actively are enormous. They're getting larger and larger, and the outlook is more growth. These are the companies that are controlling not only just certain industries, but they're also the drivers, the main drivers behind the stock market. I mean, the market itself is coming down to, you know, six or seven really large companies. All eyes are on them because that's really what the economy starts centering around, is the largest companies out there, and it gets bigger and bigger.
Mike, have you seen any? Because you are more, well, I'm gonna say you're aware of this stuff more than I am. Have the five biggest companies in the queues, have they gone over 50% now, or are they still in the 40s?
I think the last I saw is they have gone over 50%.
Well, that's tough. I know we have some new people coming in, and a couple of the places that I do some business for, and they actually have some stock in Amazon, and they've got some stock in Google and stuff. And you know, my, I guess because all they do is go up every day, it's probably the wrong advice. But my advice would be, we need to stay out of the queues, even in the protected index program, because you're already there.
Yeah.
Or I guess if they keep going up, everything else going down, maybe we should do only queues. But you know, even though, let me ask you this: what would you do if you were me? You're sitting there going, I have a feeling that if this keeps getting this way inflation-wise or whatever, that the bigger firms are going to do better in that because they have more pricing power. But if somebody came in for you to manage money to and he wanted to do an index program because he had the regular stocks he wanted, and say he's already got, you know, $1 million in the, you know, it doesn't take much. I mean, shares of Amazon and Google and a few of these places have $1 million in there. And it wants to be, if he wants to be a protected program with the other million, would you stay away from the queues or would you do more queues? I mean, traditional intelligence tells me, no, you're already in there. You want to diversify around, but hey, they're the ones that are going up. I mean, what would you do?
Right. I mean, it's really tough. You look at that and you say, well, everyone is, as a manager and someone who's investing someone's money, people want to see returns, and if the returns are in the queues, that's where they want their money. But of course, I wouldn't put anyone's money into the queues right now when you have the other indexes showing a little weakness. And if anything, I would do what's known as a pairs trade, or I would sell the queues and buy. I'd sell what's expensive and buy what's cheap, maybe, or sit on my hands. And I think as a manager, you really can't just sit on your hands and hold money back. You want to put it into play. So it puts you in a tough spot.
Well, that's one of the most difficult things. I mean, virtually everybody that I have as a client and wherever I've got one, really good people. But the one thing that's the hardest thing to impute to people, and I understand it. I mean, I get it. Is that everybody wants to be in something that's moving? Is moving recently? That one's up. Why aren't I in there? But by the same token, you know you can't trade yesterday's market, and it's right. one of the hardest principles to get across. And inevitably, if you know the part that hasn't been working for a while, the minute you get rid of it, that's the part that's working, right?
That's how it works.
So, this week, who knows? If we got some people that are out and around, I might have to call on you for another segment, bud, because first I enjoy them. Are you staying in town for Thanksgiving or out of town?
I'll be around, so hit me up.
All right, bud. Yeah. Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 15. Right. NASDAQ Futures up 75. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.